to 3,000 radio stations worldwide. In the conversation, they both likened limiting marriage to heterosexual couples to the 1960s civil rights struggles in the United States. Phone company executives won't be grilled by a Senate panel anytime soon about their roles in the Bush administration's eavesdropping program. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, said Tuesday he will hold off subpoenaing the telecommunications chiefs while he works with the White House on his legislation that would ask a secretive federal court to review the constitutionality of Bush's surveillance operations. Democrats accused Specter of abdicating Congress's oversight responsibilities. The committee's top Democrat, Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont, asked sarcastically, quote, "Why don't we just recess for the rest of the year? Vice President Cheney will just tell the nation what laws we'll have," end quote. Bush has acknowledged that the National Security Agency monitored, without court approval and thus illegally, the communications of terror suspects when one person was in the United States and another was overseas. Until Bush ordered the operations shortly after 9/11, a judge had to sign off on such monitoring. Following a report last month in USA Today, lawmakers have said the government is also using general information on Americans' telephone calls, such as the number called and the number dialed from, to analyze calling patterns to detect and track suspected terrorist activity. Unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drone aircraft, are about to be launched for the first time by the police in Los Angeles. UAVs have long been used by the military in war zones such as Iraq or Afghanistan, but the technology has been adapted for domestic use and could revolutionize the way law enforcement agencies carry out surveillance and rescue operations. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has been experimenting with a drone called Sky Seer, which it intends to put into service later this month. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
In a rare case of officer dissent, a Fort Lewis Army lieutenant has refused orders to head out to Iraq this month to lead troops in what he believes is an illegal war of occupation. First Lieutenant Aaron Watada was scheduled to make his first deployment to Iraq this month. His refusal to accompany the Stryker Brigade troops puts him at risk of court-martial and years of prison time. Watada said Tuesday in a telephone interview from Fort Lewis, quote, "I feel that we have been lied to and betrayed by this administration. It is the duty, the obligation of every soldier, and specifically the officers, to evaluate the legality, the truth behind every order, including the order to go to war," end quote. In a statement released today, Watada said, quote, "The war in Iraq violates our democratic system of checks and balances," end quote. The full extent of European collusion with the CIA during operations to abduct terrorism suspects and fly them to countries where they may be tortured is laid bare today by the continent's most authoritative human rights body. Several states have allowed the agency to snatch their own residents. Others have offered extensive logistical support, while many have turned a blind eye, according to the Council of Europe. The UK stands accused of not only allowing the use of British airspace and airports, but of providing information that was used during the torture of one suspect. The report adds that there is strong evidence to suspect two European states, Poland and Romania, of permitting the CIA to operate secret prisons on their soil, despite official denials. The road to hell was crowded with the curious on Tuesday, as well as devils in disguise, hearse enthusiasts, Christian protesters, and merchants trying to cash in on the apocalypse. Hell, Michigan, a tiny town about 60 miles west of Detroit, threw itself open for a once-in-a-millennium party to mark the passage of June 6, 2006, or 666, a number long associated with the Antichrist. Home to only about 70 souls on an average day, hell's population swelled to the hundreds by Tuesday afternoon, with dozens waiting in line to buy T-shirts emblazoned with 666. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's Wednesday. You know what that means. We'll get around to that in a minute. It's prayer meeting edition. I've got my strychnine. I got my snakes for easy handling down here in the ice chest beside me. And we'll start out with some. We'll have some fun with the right wing religion industry here very presently. As it turns out. Well, you all know what went down in the Senate today. Well, I didn't say that, did I? You all know what occurred in the Senate today, don't you? Of course you do. You know that the ugly little attempt by the Republican right to enshrine bigotry in the Constitution, for the time being, failed. Do you know the vote total? If you don't, well, it was a cloture vote. There's that word again. I think that's the only way, it's the only place on earth that word is used, cloture. But it was 49-48 and 3 not voting for cloture. They needed 60 votes to force a vote where each individual senator would stand up and say, "Yea, verily, I stand here to protect marriage and amend the Constitution to enshrine bigotry in that noble document. For we must protect marriage as it has always been in the United States, yea, verily. We must make marriage a union between a man and his chattel." Did you know that West Virginia was one of the first states in the Union to enact the Married Women's Property Act that said that married women actually could own property and it didn't just belong to their husbands? Yes, yes. It's true. One of the first states in the Union to have a medical school graduate a woman doctor. One of the first states in the Union to have a woman graduate as a lawyer from their law school. I do believe. But it was 49-48 voting for cloture. 3 not voting. One of those 3 not voting for reasons that I do not know. West Virginia's John D. Rockefeller IV. Now, I'm presently, of course, in the last couple of days of my sojourn down here in the last toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama, so, of course, we can expect that the single most ignorant, bigoted, stupid man in the Senate, Jeff Sessions, we could expect that he would vote against or vote to enshrine bigotry in the Constitution. He voted yay on cloture, as did that turncoat Senator Richard Shelby, who can't be trusted with sensitive information in the Senate anymore because he's such a sieve. But there's one other vote that bears mentioning, and it grieves me to mention it at all. Robert Byrd disturbed me today. He voted to end debate on the marriage amendment. Yes, he did. He voted to enshrine bigotry in the Constitution of the United States. And I want to be charitable. I want to believe that it's because an election year and he's afraid that John Racey will beat him over the head in nasty, filthy, right-wing Republican campaign ads accusing him of being a fag lover. I mean, because you know that's what Racey will do. John Racey has no shame. John Racey has no morals. John Racey is an ethically bankrupt individual. And he will, you know, backed by the Republican National Committee, he will run every filthy thing he can come up with against Senator Byrd in November. So this is the extent of my willingness to be tolerant in my own right. I am assuming that Senator Byrd made that vote until I hear otherwise, out of political prudence. Because he remembers, well, no, let's not even talk about the Alito debate. God. And, of course, a couple of days ago, a little something went down. Senator Byrd's campaign chairman took it on the chin in the United States Supreme Court. This past Monday, Supremes refused to review last year's West Virginia Supreme Court ruling that upheld the constitutionality of the coal severance tax in West Virginia. Coal and steel companies had appealed that ruling to the Supreme Court, saying it was unfair to make them pay anything for raping the state of West Virginia. And lead trial counsel, lead appeal counsel on that was, of course, Ned Rose. Ned Rose is, of course, Byrd's campaign chairman. I get lots of emails from him asking for money for Senator Byrd's campaign. Ned runs Byrd's campaign and was up there in Washington asking pretty please to get to steal billions and bankrupt the state of West Virginia by making the state rebate the taxes that were paid. Something like $500 million would have had to have been paid back to the 11 companies that brought the challenge. It was U.S. Steel Mining Company versus Helton. So at least for the time being, West Virginians can still at least be marginally compensated for having their state blown apart, for having, one Hiroshima every week and a half used on Appalachian Hills to level the high and lofty places where one can reach toward the sky. Yes. Yes. So there's that. And by the way, along those lines, before we get to our prayer meeting fun stuff, if you go over to truthout.org, a couple of movies there you might want to see. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago the kickoff of Pennies for Promise, or Pennies of Promise. I'm sorry, I apologize. There are movies there. Truthout.org/multimedia, I believe, is the address. You can see a small documentary, well, you know, same size as any other documentary on your computer screen. You can see a documentary about this attempt to raise penny by penny the money necessary to put children in a safe school who right now attend Marsh Fork Elementary in Raleigh County and who have literally billions of gallons of carcinogenic, cancer-causing, toxic, filthy goo hanging over their heads and breathe coal dust every day because there's a Massey Energy prep plant next to it. Penny by penny by penny, they're trying to raise the money because the state will not stand up either for the children who go to school there or the teachers who work in that environment. Penny by penny, you can see a documentary about that. Secondarily, you can see a documentary called Almost Level, West Virginia. And for those of you who do not live in that beautiful and yet tortured state that I call home, you can see it's got footage of a flyover of mountain range removal sites. And I have mentioned this from time to time, among other places. I've mentioned it in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, which you're all welcome to participate in if you're not already. It's free. Go on by. Have a blast. It's a great way to interact during the show. If there was only some way to serve cybernetic coffee, we'd be right there. But, yeah, you can. I've mentioned it in the chat room. I mentioned it on this program. A lot of people outside West Virginia don't fully get the impact of what mountain range removal means. They don't fully get the impact of what it means that every single human being in this state is, or in this country, is responsible for burning something on the order of 20 pounds of coal per day. Your lights, your stove, perhaps your... especially in the southeastern United States, where I am right now, your air conditioning, your heat, all those old steam plants that are coal-fired, that coal is coming out of blown-up mountains in Appalachia, primarily West Virginia, Kentucky, Western Virginia, and some portions of the extreme northeastern part of Tennessee. Go see Almost Level West Virginia at truthout.org/multimedia. It will serve as a stirring reminder of exactly, you know, what the hidden cost of coal is. We're talking about people who drink poisoned water, who have incredible health problems because of the insatiable demand for energy of this nation. And that's not to say that the ecological horrors that are transpiring in, say, Wyoming and Montana, in pit, you know, we have mountain range removal. Out there, they just dig huge, huge filth pits in the ground to get at it. So go and have a look. But it is Wednesday, and you know what that means. It's prayer meeting edition. And when we come back, we'll go into some of that. And, of course, as ever, your phone calls are welcome at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. And when we come back, well, let's see what the religion industry was worrying about while the world was falling apart today. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Another owner in the night, blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche. Another owner in the night.
America sure has changed since I was a little boy.
Really, Grandpa? How?
Well, back then, things moved at a slower pace. Folks cared about each other.
Really?
America was blessed by God because we were free to pray whenever we wanted.
Cool.
Then the Pledge of Allegiance was declared unconstitutional because of the phrase, under God.
Whoa.
And then our national motto, In God We Trust, was removed from all our money.
Oh, man.
Now America so completely eradicated God, it's a crime to worship him anywhere. That's why I'm in prison.
All right, visiting hours are over, son.
Bye, Grandpa. I'll see you next month.
Bye, David. Remember, I love you and I'm praying for
you. Shut up, old man. That's how you got here in the first place.
Could this be America's future? It could, unless we pass a constitutional amendment protecting our national motto and Pledge of Allegiance. Go to WePledge.com and sign the petition. Our goal is 10 million signatures. Let's make this the most signed petition in American history.
This coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Jeanette Johnson is not your typical preteen. Being a diabetic limits her in typical American girl activities.
I live with type 1 diabetes. I saw an ad on TV with a teenager who also has diabetes, but she was in favor of research on embryos, which to me is not right. I think it's selfish to perform research on these little human lives just to help make our lives better. This disease is not fun for anybody, but I would never want to destroy human life for the chance that it will produce a cure.
For more on stem cell research, log on to ChristianMedicalAssociation.org.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
So are you
people!
Welcome back. This is the Wednesday night prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Tickled to death to be with you, and hope you feel the same way. Let's go straight to the phones. Robert, our good friend in Japan, is calling in. Robert, welcome to the show. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself, sir?
Very good, very good. Enjoyed your show yesterday. I had to catch it on the podcast, but glad you made it through the 666.
Yeah, and I didn't even burst into flame once.
Well, you know, I was half raptured myself. The upper part of my torso made it up, but my groin didn't make it, though.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, well, you know, that could be tribulating, couldn't it?
Well, you know, that's, you know, tribulating, yeah, that's a new concept, yeah. I mean, why should your whole body go and just maybe parts of it go? I don't know.
Well, you know, I wonder, Robert, you know, I don't know if Japan does, but we have mandatory seatbelt laws in the U.S. now. I'm sure you're aware of that in many states. I wonder if people who expect to be raptured are exempt from that, because, you know, that could cause problems. I mean, you could wind up with just, you know, part of your torso getting raptured.
Yeah, well, you know, these people just don't think these down. So, but that's the problem. Anyway, on the gay marriage thing, I was kind of interested because I was watching the Jon Stewart show and on the Crooks and Liars homepage, and he made a good point. He said that if marriage is a good foundation for a stable society, then why shouldn't gays be married too? Because it would form a better society.
Well, that sort of stands to reason. There's nothing you really can't engage in anything approaching intellectual debate of this. The bogus dummied up issue, which of course it is, and not come down that it's a good thing all the way around. It's good for people to have health insurance benefits. It's good not to replicate those benefits from an economic standpoint. It's good for neighborhood stability. There's nothing bad about it except that it offends the very, very antiquated, bigoted notions of a weird little handful of people.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. But, yeah, I mean, marriage in Japan is kind of looked at as a social contract. So if one party breaks it, then he or she then has to really end up paying for it. Like if there's adultery here, the usual case is for the one of these, either the man or the woman, is to send the yakuza out after the person who's fooling around with the wife or whoever. And it's about $10,000 that the Yakuza shakes you down for.
Well, that's all. That's enough to keep you honest in many instances, I should think.
Yeah, I had it happen to one of my senpais, one of my professors, I missed the show because the Yakuza came in yelling and screaming and shouting and demanding the money in the university, and it was quite interesting to see, but.
I should think the university wouldn't think kindly of that.
No, I don't think they like the idea. But I also seen sound trucks. What they do is they will pull up in front of the house with this sound truck with, you know, bullhorns, and they will start shouting and yelling, and until, you know, you get so, you know, panicky that you end up paying whatever they want. But that's the price. That's the price for adultery here in Japan.
Well, you know, again, I've mentioned it a couple of times, and I, as Wayne noted on the show yesterday evening, someone else came up with the same genius idea over at BuzzFlash.com, and that is that every time one of these things comes up, some Democrat needs to offer concomitantly harsh constitutional amendment forbidding adultery and imposing stiff penalties on senators and members of Congress who are caught in flagrante delicto.
But I heard the Randy Rose show the day before yesterday and yesterday, and she was talking about George Bush's, you know, Laura Bush has moved out of the White House into the Mayflower Hotel. What did you think about that, or did you hear about that?
Yeah. Robert, I've read some of that over at WayneMadsen.com. I don't know what to make of it. It wouldn't surprise me. I have this mental image of Pickles Bush whacked out of her mind on cheap mezcal, munching on the worm, laying on a divan in the Mayflower Hotel, hollering, "Lupe, Lupe, Lortab, por favor." You know, I can believe it. I mean, this woman, I don't care much for her. I mean, she's a killer after all. But the fact of the matter is, she has suffered, and you know, there are accounts of it. In her own words, she has suffered incredible abuse over the years at the hands of George Bush. Finding out that he was in an affair with Condi Rice might very well be the final straw. It is believable, but to the best of my knowledge, it is unverified.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, all these laws for, you know, marriage, you know, like in the Philippines, you know, it's impossible to get a divorce. And, you know, having been there three or four times now, I can see the problems with that, because people just don't, they just leave their marriages, their wives, and they just start another relationship, and they, you know, just merrily go on, but even though they're technically married. So.
Well, and that's the thing. You're not, this is another silly attempt, isn't it, to legislate human behavior. And barring, I mean, and you know, that does work sometimes. I mean, in merry oldie England, everything from trespassing on up once upon a time was a capital offense, and you lost your head for it. And I guess that did control crime to a certain extent, but we like to think we're a little more enlightened than that. People are going to do what people are going to do.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's just so ass backwards, isn't it? I mean, it just ends up hurting the people that, you know, shouldn't be hurt, I suppose. But
well, if you want to protect marriage, Robert, I read some marriage counselor out there remarking at one point that probably in excess of 75% of marriages that end in the United States end as a direct result of financial issues.
Mm.
Now, if you want to protect marriage, why not take those issues out of the mix? If your marriage is falling apart because you've got crushing medical bills because one spouse got sick, or because the kids got sick, or somebody lost their job, a greater safety net would go a long way toward, as they like to say, defending marriage, wouldn't it?
Right. Well, in Japan, the marriage is actually on a big decline, and there's many, many divorces now, big time. It's really going through the roof. In fact, I've heard just recently from one of my ward office officials who I teach on Wednesdays that there's a 50% of the people in their 30s are still unmarried. And they're unmarried because they don't want to get into a relationship where, you know, the husband comes home at 11 o'clock and there's no talking, there's no conversation. And we get into this role where they're just kind of regulated to the kitchen, basically. So the women.
What does this do to the birth rate? I mean, is the birth rate concomitantly lower?
Oh, yeah. We lost population last year. I think we're the only country that lost population other than maybe Iraq. So, I mean, each year the number of children going to kindergartens is lower, lower, lower. So 2 or 3%. So, but yeah, last year, was the number, there were more people dying than there were more people being born.
Well, and I think that goes to my point here in the United States as well, Robert. People there are holding off on marriage. The birth rate is declining because of the nature of the work situation. You talk about people not coming home till 11 o'clock, no communication, no real interspousal activity or common cause, if you will. That that kind of work attitude you've pointed out yourself is where the United States is headed.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't defend marriage.
That destroys a society so fast because even if you did have children, you didn't have time to really raise them with any kind of morality or love. And so the children that are, we do see, they really don't have any connection with their parents. So it's quite a sad situation in a way.
It is a very much very sad situation, and it manifests itself in so many different ways, Robert. I said once upon a time, and I took some heat for it because I think I was taken the wrong way. But the fact that we have nursing homes in the United States, and that at some point in time we just warehouse our elderly, is a national shame, and that points to the breakdown of the family unit. A family, as these Republicans want to define it, is a man and a woman having babies. But it's so short-sighted that it doesn't take into account that the man and the woman who have the babies are going to be old people someday, and the babies are going to stick them in a nursing home and go see them twice a year.
Right. Well, they've taken that a step further here in Japan. They now have, the Japanese government has now set up islands in the Philippines to send their old people to. So little retirement islands. And I even had a friend of mine who's in his 70s who went there to check it out, and he talked about the pluses and the negatives and all, but it's going to the point where, well, old people, you can no longer really live here anymore because of various reasons, and here's a place that you can go to.
Well, and the same thing to a certain extent, similar thing happens here. Old people are not welcome in their own homes after a certain age. And at the same time that the Senate is getting ready to take up the elimination of the estate tax, the Paris Hilton tax, as it was referred to last night, Bush has proposed that people, that rules be strengthened or tightened or made more stringent and harsh in regard to old folks being able to hang on to their, literally the family farm. Or as opposed to letting the federal government take it to pay for nursing home care.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a hard situation. I have a mother who's living next to my sister, and when my other sister died, there was a big discussion about who would take care of her, and my younger sister didn't really want to have anything to do with her, even though she's the Christian of the family.
And, well, they're always the ones who are most eaten up with their lives. I can't take care of Mom. I've got a Sunday school class to teach.
She's very Republican, and finally it worked out. But it's opposite in Okinawa. In Okinawa, the old person is revered, and so there's a fight about who gets the old person.
Well, that used to be the case in Japan, did it not, Robert?
Well, yes, and then I guess over a long period of time, it just you got into smaller apartments, perhaps, and there was simply no place to put them because you're in two small little rooms, and the whole thing, everybody sleeps together, so there just wasn't any room, I suppose. So, but Okinawa's held on to its culture more than the other places in Japan.
There's a wonderful Second World War play called Tea House of the August Moon. That deals with the American occupation of Okinawa. There's a lot of humor in it, but it was apparently written by someone who had actually been there, and that reverence for the family unit is manifested. And that's I think the United States, whether it's the Far East or whether it's Iraq, we're running up against cultures that do still have a little bit of reverence for the family, and we don't rub them very well. In terms of the way we view it.
Oh, yes, right. Well, there's a good book that one of my part-timers was telling me about called Lost Japan, and how pretty much the industrialization through the westernization, modernization, Japan's pretty much lost its culture and its soul, basically, and that's what he was telling me about. So I'd like to take a look at it.
Lost? Yeah. Did you say lost Japan?
Lost Japan, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna look for that myself, Robert. We've got to take our break, but I'm getting very fond of hearing from you every Wednesday night.
Well, I'll try to call you more often. It's just my morning schedule, so. But
I know how that goes.
I listen to you every day, though. So.
All right, thank you, Robert. Have yourself a wonderful morning there.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Robert in Japan. And I hope this opens your eyes as much as it does mine to hear all these different perspectives. Because it will. We've got to look. We've got to look at ourselves. You know, even the liberals, even the progressives. We must be in a constant state of self-examination to find what's right and what's wrong. Because when you just assume, everything is subject to question. That's why we're liberals. Because when you start taking things as read, that's when you start getting into trouble. Looking at it this way, Joe Lieberman is a Democrat, therefore Joe Lieberman should be reelected. No. No. You see what I mean? Okay, let's take our break. When we come back, more of your phone calls, if you so desire, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob on the Head On Radio Network.
That's wrapped around me is cutting through my skin, and the doubts that I've surrounded me are finding their way in. I keep it close to me like a holy man prays in my desperate hour. It's better, better that way. So I'll come by and see you again. I'll be such a
last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send
something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Thank you, brethren and sistren. Ooh, nice job, Agnes. Oh, I feel like I need a shower now. I feel like a televangelist. I feel like Kenneth Copeland the other day on Believer's Voice of Victory. Oh, Jesus is in business. He's doing business all over the... You know what, he's selling bananas? Ugh. No, a couple of... It is prayer meeting night, so... Well, let's go to the phones. Our good friend Peter is joining us from Tallahassee, Florida. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Happy prayer meeting.
Thank you. You know, we've been talking about the marriage issue for several nights now, and you knew that at some point I was going to call in. You knew this was going to happen.
Well, you kind of had to, didn't you?
Yes, exactly.
It was a moral imperative.
Yes. God forbid that this should go down without Peter having some sort of input in it.
Now, you did not just say go down.
Oh, Lord, well, I did mean in the biblical sense.
That's okay. I did it earlier.
You know...
Said it.
Yeah, said it. This thing, you know, it's called, the Protection of Marriage Act, and it is so misnamed. This is not the protection of marriage. It is the Protection of Right-Wing Fundamentalist Beliefs Act. What this is the protection of a theology and of a church doctrine that is not endorsed by the populace. You know, there are surveys out recently where people are talking about jobs going overseas, the gas prices, the cost of living, health insurance. And in fact, I read one article today where out of 1,000 people interviewed, only 3 people said anything about gay marriage being an issue. This is simply something to protect. Well, of course, it's also to help energize the ignorant in terms of voting drives, but really it's just to protect fundamentalist beliefs. You talk about the separation of church and state. Now we want to enact a constitutional amendment to protect religious beliefs of a particular cult. Is that not amazing?
Well, and that's one of the best points I've heard, and I've heard a lot of them, about this whole debate, Peter. And I haven't heard it framed that way. These so-called constitutional amendments the individual states are putting up, and one of them passed here in Alabama just yesterday, like 80% to 20%. You know, imagine that, Alabama passing a bigoted constitutional amendment. You know, who'd have thunk? But the fact of the matter is, it's an outright stomping of people's freedom of religion. Because not everybody believes the way these fundy weirdos do.
Precisely. And you have the mega churches and the what's his name? Sammy Brownback, Brokeback Mountain.
Senator Brokeback.
Yes, Senator Brokeback, you know, with his millions of dollars. Wasn't he the guy that had the huge amount of money behind supporting all this?
It's so wrong, Peter, and it's so divisive. It's so, you know, there's that word, bigoted.
Well, it is. It is. And if it was another religion that was a predominant religion, we may very well be seeing constitutional amendments to protect their beliefs. This just ain't right. You know, the Constitution clearly provides separation of church and state, and there should never be an amendment to protect someone's particular religious beliefs. And that's what it boils down to. No one is talking about forcing churches to marry anybody. Hell, churches today are not forced to marry anybody. The huge majority of churches won't marry anybody who's not a member, and the ones that do will insist on some sort of interview with the pastor regarding the two that would like to get married. And the church has they can certainly refuse to marry anyone based on we think you're incompatible, based on we're not ready, we don't think you're ready yet, based on, you know, one is dead and one's living, you know, any number of reasons. Church, you just don't have the only, you know, this whole thing, you know, if gay people wanted to get married, there are many churches that are welcoming them to get married. All churches,
yes,
have the absolute right to refuse to marry anyone. That's not about to change. And furthermore, it doesn't even have to be a church. It can be a justice of the peace. Hell, the straight people go through drive-thrus in Las Vegas.
To get married by Elvis impersonators.
Get married by an Elvis impersonator.
I'll now pronounce you a man and wife. Thank you very much.
We have marriages that take place on the internet in chat rooms by a minister that they know and who comes in the chat room. People get married in chat rooms. You know, talk about marriage. It's not about marriage. It's about the protection of religious freedom. Now that's kind of my perspective on it. But I did see an article today. It was from Op-Ed News, and Rob Call who did the article, and he was pointing out that you know, of course, marriage is under attack, of course, but it's under attack by things like technology, cell phones, computers, things that allow people to meet in chat rooms and continue these under the table relationships. They're an assault by technology, by taking people's time away from anything but, you know, being together.
Right, and it's Peter, it's under it is, as I mentioned with Robert, it's under attack by substandard wages.
Oh yes, marriage
is under attack by the marriages of some 30, 40 million Americans are under attack by virtue of the lack of health care for them and their family.
Exactly, and your interview with David the other night pointed out that to a degree. You know, he's apparently a member of a union also, and about how unfair it was that other people were able to take advantage of things that are extended to them in terms of benefits that he's not able to take advantage of. It's got to do with wages and that sort of thing too. But the article that I'm referring to also points out that the fundies are not going after them because they have power behind them. They have lawyers, they had the pharmaceutical companies, they had the TV industry, the manufacturers of cell phones, the manufacturers of computers. Right-wingers, no way in hell are they going to challenge that. What are they going to do? They're going to attack a group that's really not challenging or threatening marriage at all. All for the point of just, you know, protecting their religious beliefs. It's just a sham. It's a sham.
Well, I'd use words probably stronger than that, Peter. The incidents, and see, this is the other place, and see, this is where liberals and progressives lose out, because we talk about the real nature of the debate, whereas, you know, the right wingers have a bumper sticker, protect marriage.
Yes, protect marriage. And then the one behind them goes, Yep, everybody agrees to that. It's just everybody, because they have their blinders on. The only thing they see are the protect marriage and bring home the troops or support the troops stickers. I mean, you know, these people are so blinded.
The incidents, it's not, you know, that's the thing, Peter. It's not marriage. It's not what happens, and this is, you know, even the religion industry will acknowledge, it's not what happens in the church. Because the religion industry would be hard-pressed to tell another religion that they couldn't marry whom they pleased. It is the incidents, the civil incidents of marriage. It's what happens to your property. It's how you file your taxes. It's what it's whether or not you can make a will together.
Right, right. Yes, let's take away all of the societal benefits and rights of inheritance and visiting people in hospitals and turning off the heart lung machine when someone's brain dead. Let's and the parents of the gay partners coming in and taking the homes. Let's forget about all those rights. Let's just talk about, you know, what they're really saying. You know, marriage is supposed to be the marriage of one penis and one vagina. Excuse me. But, you know, it's not that at all. What it is it's this huge range of rights. And, you know, it's like being born dead. When you are born gay, it's like being born dead into the world. It really is.
Well, in the marriage vows, the traditional ones, isn't there some point at which the gospel sharp says, what God hath joined together, let no man put asunder?
Well, this is absolutely true. This is absolutely
and even in these traditional rites, it doesn't say what man and woman God hath put together, joined together, or there's no reference. It's spiritual, for crying out loud.
Yes, and there are other references in the Bible that remarks that Jesus has made. For instance, when he was being questioned about, well, then who should marry? And Jesus responds to, some men are made eunuchs by others, and some for the sake of God, and others are made eunuchs from their mother's womb. Now, the translation of the word eunuchs does not necessarily mean men whose testicles have been removed. It was used in more general terms than that during those days. And I fully believe that his reference to men who are born eunuchs from the mother's womb does not womb does not have a damn thing to do with whether they have descended testicles. It has entirely to do with sexual orientation. And
right.
There's a thousand references like that, but they're all blind to them. They don't give a damn. It's pride.
Well, it's a con.
It's a con. And it's their pride, and they have gone out way on a limb, and we're putting our foot down at the queers getting married, and they're going to any lengths to
But 50 years ago, I should know, you know, I'm still a member of that little that great big Southern Baptist megachurch. I should know, 50 years ago, they were putting their foot down over miscegenation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
we can't have a bunch of babies growing up kind of off coffee colored, because they won't be accepted by the whites and they won't be accepted by the coloreds.
Yeah, well,
they'll be outcast like half breed Injuns was 100 years ago.
Gay folk in this country are getting pretty damn tired of it. I got to tell you, I'm so gay, when I drive down the highway, the pavement turns pink behind me. So freaking through with this. It is so lowbrow, it's so low beam, and it's so transparent. And it has to do so much for people who do not think for themselves. They, you know, they go into these churches where they assume the minister is speaking directly from God, and assume that it's all true, and never use their God-given intellect to figure this crap out. It's easy for them to make up one lie after the next lie. Hell, I can lie on the spot, too. I can make it up on the fly. It's harder for us. We have to tell the truth and document, and that's in their advantage. I wish I could lie the truth on demand, if I could just, you know, pull the truth out of the air and say it. But, hell, I have to research it. I have to figure this stuff out. I have to use my mind. I despise
Peter. I could be filthy stinking rich. I'm not blowing my own horn or anything, but I think I'm pretty good at what I do. If I was doing what I do and preaching so-called conservative values, I would be awash in money.
Oh, Bob, you could make a fortune. You could make a fortune. And if I were to decide, you know, I don't give a damn either. You know, Bob's going to do conservative broadcasting and lie his butt off, and I'm just going to go following right along and try to help out with the wires and the packets and all the stuff I try to help with. Hell, I'd end up being rich, too. I'd end up on a huge payroll. I mean, you know, but I don't care. I just don't care. I deny those people. I deny them. I will never accept them, and I cannot cross over into that abyss. There.
No, you cannot any more than you can change who and what you are. It's a matter of to thine own self be true.
Absolutely. And some of these people, these log closet Republicans, God, what are they thinking? And these blacks, these token, I mean, you've got The black bot Condi, you've got the Blackwell. God knows what he's thinking. These people are so traitorous, so treacherous to who they are and the experiences of their ancestors and their roots.
Well, I happen to catch a little bit of Ken. I like to call him No Chin Ken Melman.
Oh, Lord.
Chairman of the Republican National Committee. This guy is gay. And he was on MSNBC talking to Chris Matthews about and Matthews kept pressing him, you know, well, do we really need to come down hard on gay marriage? And I wanted Chris Matthews to just finally, and you're gay. How can you do this?
Right. You're a freaking disco queen. Get over it. You know, Jesus, the people that we have to tolerate.
I want to break into Ken Melman's house and find the Barbara Streisand collection and just have done with it.
Oh, honey, you know she's got it on 7-inch reels, and she's got it on vinyl, and she's got it on. She's made all these special little CDs and tapes that she mails to her friends. Jesus,
Judy Garland doilies. I mean, you know that's in Ken Melman's house.
Of course, you know these people. It's
well, and some and there was, you know, there was a few months ago the gay Republican campaign strategist who crafted a whole bunch of this garbage went up to Massachusetts and got married.
You're kidding me! I missed
no.
That I missed that detail. Well, if they didn't get married, they're no doubt regulars on South Beach and Fire Island and all the other
belt buckle invitation Senator Frist
that we had to
remember that.
Yes, there was a cowboy invitation. You had to unzip the cowboy's take his belt buckle all and unzip him to see the invitation. I mean, geez,
yeah,
Lord, I've been to a lot of gay parties, honey, but I never got an invitation like that. You know what the hell.
And do you remember months ago? Do you remember the Southern Baptist minister who was leading the defense of marriage out in Oklahoma?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
See, I mean, they pile up and they pile up, and we forget about them. And then these things come around, and I, not me, not anybody, nobody is standing there with a list of these people going, these are the people who want to protect marriage.
No, but as soon as the news cycle is over, it's down the memory hole. But boy, you look at Clinton. Every day we had to see him in line with a little hug to Monica. Every day we had to hear about it. It was never forgotten. Today they still bring it up. The corporate media, you know, may they all burn in hell.
And we can't get anybody to verify whether or not Pickles is passed out on the divan in the Mayflower Hotel.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, that was so funny what you were saying earlier about, what was it about, somebody give me another pill? What did you say?
Whacked out of her mind on mezcal, hollering, Lupe, Lortab, por favor.
Yes, Lortab, por favor. I thought I was going to have to pick myself up off the floor. That was so funny. I could just see that left wing. Well, mall, looking back on a divan with her forehead resting, you know, on her forehead, you know, or her backhead doing whatever. Her swoon.
I have a sick headache.
Yeah, I have a sick headache. Lord have mercy. Oh dear Lord, Bob, I love your show. I wouldn't trade it for God or money.
God bless you, Peter. Thanks for all your great points. I appreciate it. And thanks for the laugh. We need the laughs.
Yeah, I got to, dude.
That's right. See ya.
Good night.
Our good friend Peter from Tallahassee, also our IT professional. And some of this, you have to laugh. You have to laugh at them. The other part of it, you know, he said the gay community's getting a little tired of all this. It's about time to get up in their faces. Now, I threw a little fit on the air the other night, and I'm not going to do it again, but it's time to get up in these people's faces. Straight people, gay people, transgendered people, bi people, people who stand, you know, who believe in, you know, the stuff that we say that we believe in the United States, you know, human rights. You know, unless, you know, 600,000 Alabamians declared that gay people aren't human yesterday. Dig it. Let's go to the top of the hour news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. A roll call vote on the gay marriage amendment occurred this afternoon, failing to gain the three-fifths majority it would have needed to pass the chamber. The vote fell largely on party lines, with Republicans Lincoln Chafee, Susan Collins, Judd Gregg, John McCain, Olympia Snowe, Arlen Specter, and John Sununu voting against the motion to close debate on the proposed amendment. In a related story, James Dobson and Tony Snow had a conversation on the topic in Snow's West Wing office that was broadcast to 3,000 radio stations worldwide. In the conversation, they both likened limiting marriage to heterosexual couples to the 1960s civil rights struggles in the United States. Phone company executives won't be grilled by a Senate panel anytime soon about their roles in the Bush administration's eavesdropping program. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, said Tuesday he will hold off subpoenaing the telecommunications chiefs while he works with the White House on his legislation that would ask a secretive federal court to review the constitutionality of Bush's surveillance operations. Democrats accused Specter of abdicating Congress's oversight responsibilities. The committee's top Democrat, Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont, asked sarcastically, quote, "Why don't we just recess for the rest of the year? Vice President Cheney will just tell the nation what laws we'll have," end quote. Bush has acknowledged that the National Security Agency monitored, without court approval and thus illegally, the communications of terror suspects when one person was in the United States and another was overseas. Until Bush ordered the operations shortly after 9/11, a judge had to sign off on such monitoring. Following a report last month in USA Today, lawmakers have said the government is also using general information on Americans' telephone calls, such as the number called and the number dialed from, to analyze calling patterns to detect and track suspected terrorist activity. Unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drone aircraft, are about to be launched for the first time by the police in Los Angeles. UAVs have long been used by the military in war zones such as Iraq or Afghanistan, but the technology has been adapted for domestic use and could revolutionize the way law enforcement agencies carry out surveillance and rescue operations. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has been experimenting with a drone called Sky Seer, which it intends to put into service later this month. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
In a rare case of officer dissent, a Fort Lewis Army lieutenant has refused orders to head out to Iraq this month to lead troops in what he believes is an illegal war of occupation. First Lieutenant Aaron Watada was scheduled to make his first deployment to Iraq this month. His refusal to accompany the Stryker Brigade troops puts him at risk of court-martial and years of prison time. Watada said Tuesday in a telephone interview from Fort Lewis, quote, "I feel that we have been lied to and betrayed by this administration. It is the duty, the obligation of every soldier, and specifically the officers, to evaluate the legality, the truth behind every order, including the order to go to war," end quote. In a statement released today, Watada said, quote, "The war in Iraq violates our democratic system of checks and balances," end quote. The full extent of European collusion with the CIA during operations to abduct terrorism suspects and fly them to countries where they may be tortured is laid bare today by the continent's most authoritative human rights body. Several states have allowed the agency to snatch their own residents, others have offered extensive logistical support, while many have turned a blind eye, according to the Council of Europe. The UK stands accused of not only allowing the use of British airspace and airports, but of providing information that was used during the torture of one suspect. The report adds that there is strong evidence to suspect two European states, Poland and Romania, of permitting the CIA to operate secret prisons on their soil, despite official denials. The road to hell was crowded with the curious on Tuesday, as well as devils in disguise, hearse enthusiasts, Christian protesters, and merchants trying to cash in on the apocalypse. Hell, Michigan, a tiny town about 60 miles west of Detroit, threw itself open for a once-in-a-millennium party to mark the passage of June 6, 2006, or 666, a number long associated with the Antichrist. Home to only about 70 souls on an average day, Hell's population swelled to the hundreds by Tuesday afternoon, with dozens waiting in line to buy T-shirts emblazoned with 666. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's do another hour of highly professional conversation radio right here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob, of course. You know the phone number is 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. I'm not an auctioneer. I can slow down. But see, that song by The Darkness, it just gets me going. I love a little headbanging music here and there. Let's go to the phones. David is joining us. Welcome to the program. Hey, David.
Yes. Hi, Bob. How you doing?
How are you? I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. I thought I'd just add a couple of things to what's been being said. I don't think it's been emphasized enough that any consideration of gay marriage does not require any religion to sanctify it. We're talking about civil marriage, not religious marriage. Even in Massachusetts, no church is required to perform gay marriage ceremony, if that's not part of their beliefs.
You're absolutely right, David. I think that's part of the significant amount of misdirection that's involved with this, though, and.
Yes.
Toward the south, there are fundies down here who think that they're not going to be able to be fundies anymore if gay people couldn't get married. I'm not kidding.
No, there was an editorial in today's Springfield, Massachusetts Republican, which really addresses that. And if I could have your indulgence, maybe read a few passages from that.
Absolutely. Share that with us, please.
Okay. And this newspaper, as I said in my interview the other night, has always been very supportive of gay marriage, and they really seem to have it right. And here's some of the highlights. Okay. Terrorists, high gas prices, and activist judges from Massachusetts. This is the new axis of evil for the White House and Congress. And this, of course, was written before the vote was taken today. The proposed amendment has no chance of surviving a test vote in the Senate today, and the congressional leaders say neither the House nor the Senate has the two-thirds majority that will be required to send it to the states for ratification. GOP leaders acknowledge as much, but they still set aside 3 days for debate in the Senate, time that could have been spent on more important matters. It is not the institution of marriage they wish to protect, but a Republican majority in the House and Senate in November. And that's really the key right there. Bush and GOP leaders use the same arguments we will hear in Massachusetts next month when legislators are scheduled to meet in joint session to vote on a proposed petition to amend the state constitution to restrict marriage to one man and one woman. Gay marriage will destroy marriage as the fundamental institution of civilization. After 2 years of gay marriages here in Massachusetts, it is fair to say that the institution is undamaged and civilization is safe. The Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court got it right. The freedom to marry belongs to all Americans. The Constitution outlaws discrimination. It doesn't promote it. Voters are more concerned with the war in Iraq, the economy, terrorism, health care, gasoline prices, and the national debt. If Bush and the Republican-led Congress want to maintain majorities in the House and Senate, they should do some real work on these concerns. And this is, again, this is from the Springfield, Massachusetts Republican, and your listeners can access this just simply by going to masslive.com and click on the editorial link.
Wonderful, and it's so, you know, it's so very well well put forth. I think one, I've got a sort of an in your face attitude about this. I think it's I think it's time to stop being nice about some of this, David. Especially where these dangerous fundies are concerned, they've got to, I think some of them have got to be openly confronted. And I don't, you know, I don't mean violence or anything like that. But you, this notion we've assumed that there's a two sides to every issue. There's no other side to this issue. There is no downside to this issue, and people must be made to at least acknowledge that that argument is being made. Well, right now, that's not the case.
In Massachusetts, you know what it is. I think what the problem is for you have the fundies, as you call, and the real hard right wing, and then you have a larger number of people that sort of go along with them because they don't have any frame of reference. Whereas in Massachusetts, they do have a frame of reference. There's been 8,000 gay couples have been married in the last 2 years, and nothing has happened. And people in this state understand that and can actually see that. And the argument about civilization falling apart, the populace and everything else happening, did you see it? The general person, it may not be especially supportive of gays, sees that, you know, it's a total fallacy. It's just not
happening. It's also a long fight, David, because it must be borne in mind that the freedom riders that took to the roads in the late 50s and early 60s and eventually put an end to the bigotry that was American apartheid, that battle was largely won. But, you know, and this is true in Massachusetts as it is in Alabama or Illinois or Idaho or California, you can still hear hateful racial epithets.
Oh, yeah.
That means the battle isn't won.
I mean,
there are still Klan chapters, you know.
It probably took about 20 years before at least institutional racism no longer existed. You know, Brown versus Board of Education, that came in 1954, and
right.
Probably took a good, at least another 20 years before the institution of segregation was stopped, because discrimination and bigotry, it's still alive and well, including in my own state.
Exactly. So, you know, like I said, this is a long fight, but the same people, the same people, or the grandchildren, really, or the grandparents of the people who are hollering about, you know, we must defend marriage, were as I mentioned with Peter, that's the same people who were hollering that we must not tolerate the mongrelization of the races, and that, you know, that we needed literacy tests, and, you know, America will go to hell if those people get to vote.
Well, incidentally on that, our illustrious governor, as you may remember, invoked an obscure law that was written in 1913 in this state, saying that the state wouldn't recognize marriages that are not recognized in other states, and it was done specifically at the time, obviously, for mixed race marriages. And he invoked that so that people from other states could not come to Massachusetts and get married.
Well, all I can say is that I'm glad that folks like you, David, are out there and you're shining a light and you're leading by example. I hope that as this program and this network grows, we can hear from more folks who are fighting to end this kind of bigotry. There will be a day, because if we don't believe this, there's no sense in the fight. There will be a day when there is no bigotry in the United States of America, or else there will be a day when there is no United States of America, because bigotry kills.
Sure does.
And I hope that you pass your learning, your knowledge, your compassion, your understanding on to those who are the next group, you know, moving onward, coming up, because, you know, it's that absence of leadership, and I think we feel it in our side, and heaven knows it's present on the other side. Real leadership, get out and do and show and lead by example. Kind of leadership that we're so desperately lacking.
Most definitely, yes.
Well, I thank you very kindly for your call. I'm gonna move on, David. Other folks are in line, but
okay.
Thank you so much for joining us. And fight the fight, man. Fight the fight.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
Take care, our good friend David, our new good friend David from Massachusetts. Agnes, dear, let's skip the break and keep the phones rolling. Jim is calling. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You?
Oh, let me get this alligator clip out of my way. Thank you. I'll tell you, I lost track after Peter. I felt like Aunt Pity Pat Hamilton. I had to call for the spelling fault. I mean, he is truly, and this is a compliment, Peter, you are the creme de la creme of high camp.
That's bless your heart. That is a high compliment.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But, you know, I've got a girlfriend in San Francisco who has several of the girls she travels around with. And she says their motto is, toward all these men they date, if they don't go down, they don't stay around. And I said, you know, you can apply this to marriage, too. How can you pass marriage if you flunk the orals?
Well said.
But anyway,
you're full of them, Jim.
Uh-huh.
You're full of them.
You just don't know. But listen, Peter, one of Peter's bees just rolled past my house, and that's fine. He is truly uninhibited, and it's a refreshing thing to hear. He really is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's all, and that's what I want this program to be. Everybody at their very best, at their most free, at their most open, because, you know, that's how we achieve the dialogue. And if we learn to laugh a little bit along the way, we're so much the better.
Well, absolutely, I concur with that. I mean, there is enough stuff to cry about. What's this about Laura Bush splitting for the Mayflower?
You know, there's no. I hesitated to talk about it, Jim. But it was reported at WayneMadsen.com, that's M-A-D-S-E-N, and I think Randy Rhodes has talked about it extensively. But there are these rumblings in D.C. that Laura split the White House and bugged out for the Mayflower because she was tired of George's shenanigans, and there were allegations that he was getting it on with Condi.
Oh, Lord, I would love to see that. No, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
No. As a matter of fact, no. That's just way too much for me to envision. But, you know, I can imagine she probably is, or just might. I mean, anybody who would drive to the front of their car through the front of a picture window because somebody said something in a speech you didn't like back during his earlier days, or, you know, she's probably emotional fragile or is. She probably never got over that accident she was in high school, which that girl...
Yeah, where she killed the boyfriend?
Well, I mean, in all fairness to Miss Bush, she didn't mean to do that. I mean, she's not a murderess or a killer, but the worst fate of all is having to live with him.
Yeah.
Like I said with
Peter, Jim, it's the things that we forget. Do you remember when Condi was being queried about some aspect of her advising of George? She referred to him as my husband or the president.
Yeah, Freudian slip. Boy, I tell you, that's something. Well, you know, honestly and truly, even Lee Atwater said about him before he died, this was back in 86, I think, when Elder Bush was running for the presidency and W was hitting the bottle pretty heavy and finally, I think, had gotten on one bender so bad that he almost probably had to be hospitalized for alcohol toxicity. But anyway, even Lee Atwater said, thank God, we hope he has gone on the wagon because he is such a nasty drunk. And for Lee Atwater to call anybody nasty, I mean, even Lee Atwater had his moments of penitence before he died, and he called as many people as he could to apologize to him. But when he realized he was dying of cancer, I mean, he's from my home state. He's from Columbia.
Right.
I knew Lee personally.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
School. I used to teach there. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, you wouldn't have thought that he would have developed into that, but he got unhooked with Strom Thurmond and I guess was encouraged in his mean spiritedness as an attack dog by the Bush people. I mean, these people always get somebody else to do the dirty work for them. But see, W was his boss, okay? In the Bush
campaign. during the 92 campaign, right?
And even when W quit drinking, Lee Atwater said, "Thank God he is such a nasty drunk and just evil and mean." I mean, there's some people who, Bob, when they drink, they become happy, relaxed, and they're okay. And some just have a complete Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type transformation. They have a volatile personality. They turn about face. And they're horrible people. And all you want to do is either get them out of your house and hope that somebody will lock them up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Bush is probably one of them. And I'm still looking at a bottle of whiskey saying congratulations on X number of years of sobriety.
Well, do you remember? You remember the story about when Dear Leader got his first DUI? It was up in Kennebunkport, and he came home and yelled at Poppy Bush, "You know, let's have at it, old man, just you and me, mano a mano." You remember that account?
Oh, well, I've heard accounts that he screams at his mother so that the old man gets up and walks out of the room. I mean, somebody just needs to take their fist and just slam the living daylights out of him in the middle of next week. And he was just, I don't know. I just think the man is just mentally, I really think he's mentally ill. And I think he's seriously flawed and has horrible, horrible personality flaws. I mean, you can look at him and tell that. And by the way he speaks and by the way he behaves himself, by his comportment and demeanor. Really. I mean, I can tell which side his bread's buttered on. And I'll tell you, he's a couple sandwiches short of a picnic.
Well, we've had the audio on the show from time to time. This business about he quit drinking, though, Jim, you know, I think you might be a little late sending him the bottle with the congratulations on it because he never quit. I mean, I saw him standing in the Hermitage in St. Petersburg at 3 a.m. one time on a live feed from CNN, standing there with Vladimir Putin. And I assure you that was not Russian tap water in the glass.
Now, you know that was mineral water, Bob.
No, because I've never seen somebody make a face like that at mineral water.
Maybe he was
he's a bourbon boy, Jim.
You think? Well, listen, I have wasted enough of your time. You say it's prayer meeting tonight. And by the way, I don't think any of y'all will have to worry about seatbelts, okay? I don't think you're going to. Put that at the last of your worries, okay? Just put that at the last of your worries. And I'm sure.
Well, you know, I cruise the Fundy parking lots on Sunday looking for cars that I like so that when the rapture does come, I get a nice car.
Bob, now come on now. I'm sure that if it does happen and if you're meant to go, they'll find a way to hit the button on the seat belt and you'll be sliding on up and just hope you don't have those on dirty old underpants, okay?
God almighty, Jim, all right.
Just let that.
Thanks so much.
Just don't be wearing dirty drawers if it happens, all right?
I took my mother's advice very well. Take care, Jim.
No tears in the bed.
Later. Bye now. And rolling onward, our good friend David from Tennessee is with us. David, welcome.
Thank you, Bob. And I have been welcomed into a. I've been welcomed. Oh, gracious, into an arena after two of the best calls you've ever taken. And I feel a little bit like those guys on the old Ed Sullivan show where they, you know, the comic got ushered onto the stage right after Charlton Heston read the Bible. I'm going to get this is a slot from, well, another part of the world. But anyway, I thought I heard a news broadcast. I thought I heard the head-on news. There's some linkage, there's some time that's been spent between Mr. Tony, I survived cancer, so you should believe every word I say, Snow, and the Reverend James, God gets me on the telephone three times a day, so you should believe every word I say, Dobson.
Yeah. I heard Bruce doing that story, and I thought he'd sort of, you know, put in a little joke story, but no, apparently there was a joint broadcast from the press secretary's office today?
So there was a joint broadcast from the press secretary's office involving Tony. I survived cancer, so please believe every word I say because the president wants me to, Snow, and Reverend James, God talks to me three times a day, so you should believe every word I say, Dobson.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the topic was centered around, my guess would be, two men spending time with each other in a caring, nurturing relationship and enjoying their company at 2 a.m. And there was a coming together of Reverend Dobson and Mr. Snow. I'm sorry. Oh, please. Bob, listeners, I'm extremely sorry. I may have said this incorrectly. I may have. Oh Lord, what a fluff I just made. So let me try this again. There was a conversation between Mr. Snow and Reverend Dobson, and they became bedfellows politically.
Politically. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I've got that feeling about Fundies.
Oh, gosh. What? Wait a second. Closet. I'm really sorry. But, you know, I applaud those two men for wanting to get something straight between them, don't you think?
Oh, where's that damn snare drum?
Okay. I've tried to have enough fun.
He'll be here all the week, and don't forget to tap your waitress or tip your waitress.
Boom. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist trying to be foolish about it.
No, there's a million of them available out there. You know, Jim asked me about this business with Laura Pickles whacked out on the divan at the Mayflower. The next story under that one, and again, David, you know, I do have kind of, sort of, a little bit of journalistic ethics, so I don't report things as facts. I just throw things out there sometimes for people's perusal. But the June 4th, 2006 entry at WayneMadsonReport.com is a letter from a lady named Leola McConnell, liberal Democratic candidate for governor of Nevada.
Okay.
And this letter to which she has put her name, she says that she was the third party in a three-way between George Bush and Victor Ash.
Oh, my Lord. I know that name.
Former mayor of Knoxville, ambassador to Poland.
Yes, thank you. I knew, because, I spent 19 years of my life in Knoxville, and I knew that name from a long time ago. And occasionally, I check in with what's going on in Knoxville, and it's an ugly political part of the state. But I knew that name,
And I'm not going to get into the details or anything. Anybody who wants to read this can go and look, WayneMadsenReport.com. She says, other homoerotic acts were also performed by then-private citizen George Bush because I performed one of them on him personally.
Now, wait a second. This is this woman is stating this, and it's out there, and it's available for discussion with her, right?
Been trying to figure out how to reach her.
Potentially. All right. Well, I mean, it's as available as, Monica was once she had retained counsel, right?
Probably more so, yeah.
Yeah, probably more so. Yeah, exactly. Well, there's always that angle of odd behavior. I think the Republicans are the most repressed group of people, typically, stereotypically, in a cliche sense, that anybody's going to find. And we find over and over and over, theirs are closeted, unusual, hidden acts that they want badly for people not to know about and not to know exactly what the act was. I'm sorry, I still say that Bill Clinton was a married man of power that allowed a woman that chose to present herself work her way past his defenses, and we spent how many millions of dollars, running that one around? And now we've got George Bush, and we've got Rumsfeld, and we've got all the rest of them doing what they're doing, and we're not doing anything, and we've got phones tapped, and we're not doing anything, and we've got Cheney totally, totally dominated by energy barons creating ways for all of those companies to make bazillions, and we're not doing anything. What's that bumper sticker you love to quote? Bill lied, nobody died?
Yeah. Exactly. So, somewhere along the way, the mask has to come off.
I think it's coming off, and this takes me back to something I had wanted badly to ask you about. I beg your indulgence on the slight change of emphasis.
Oh, please, at your leisure.
But when George W. Bush made that admission out of nowhere, unexpectedly, about, I should have never said, bring it on. Didn't that sound like a beaten man, a man bordering on some kind of breakdown? Was that just a completely muddled, everything that I thought worked for me isn't working for me? Wasn't that a guy about to drop to his knees and say, America, forgive me? Wasn't he skating with his head down close to thin ice?
Well, I think he was, and I think you see it in the immigration debate as well, David. Today he came out and was trying to win back, God knows how, win back his strange little his strange little base that hates brown people so much, and he said, "We're gonna make the Mexicans come here and, but when they come here and when they become citizens, we're gonna make them learn English." This was the line. This was one of those tear at the hair, run screaming around the room kind of things. They're gonna have to learn English. There's a debt to society to be paid.
There's a debt to society. I thought it was simple. I saw a headline on a very condensed, very edited, like an MSN type thing on my webpage at work about George George wants assimilation. Well, if his version of assimilation is a debt to society by learning English,
Yeah, and that's, but again, it had that flavor of desperation. What you interpreted as an air of defeat, I saw as sort of a desperate reaching, if you will, from an emotional standpoint. Because I think that business all the way back to the 2004 elections, where people were, you know, can you think of one thing that you've done wrong? Is there any? Have you ever made a mistake, George? And we know from past studies of his personality that he is long to remember and loath to forgive, and he has remembered that. And I would submit to you that given what we know about this man's twisted, sick psyche, that this has gnawed at him and this has eaten at him, and he finally I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of his fundamentalism, you know, where he, you know, pride goeth before a fall, you know, that kind of a thing. Does this make any sense, David?
So maybe he's taking step one half in a 12-step program? That's possible. I just think on a given day, he decided not to talk to a handler. He decided not to take his medication. He decided not to have a tequila sunrise. He decided not to do anything but just get up and walk around and not be prepared by a cadre of people that walk him through what he's supposed to say and rehearse him. I think he walked out there. I think maybe that God that talks to him in the middle of the night, I think one of those was, George, you're pissing me off. I think we're going to see him shatter. I think we're going to see the facade crumble. I think we're going to see that man step to a podium someday or walk out on the White House lawn or in one of these sham press conferences. I really think something's going to worm its way past his defenses and his handler's defenses and Cheney's defenses and Rove's defenses. I think as an individual, I think there may still be a glimmer of guilt and conscience within that poor little brain of his that he may one day break. And as far dropping back to an earlier point, this business of him being a bad drunk, I've always believed that alcohol especially just amplifies what is your core personality. If you're a happy guy normally, you're just the loudest happy guy. And if you're not a very nice person, it comes out multiplied. So yeah, I'm sure he was a bad drunk, but I think he's on the way to breaking down. I see him coming apart.
Well, it explains Laura at the Mayflower, doesn't it?
Even though it's a potentially wild and speculative rumor, this business of her walking away from him and being at the Mayflower and just saying, you know, little time out, I think they'll be over here. You will not read any reference to that hotel without the caveat that it is the most respected and revered hotel for preserving anonymity in the District of Columbia. It has the longest history of what happens at the Mayflower stays at the Mayflower. And here's this poor, in the economic sense, child that got herself some way, somehow, through a college and was a teaching librarian. And in that part of Texas, she thought, wait a second, he's smiling at me, and my Lord, there's dollar signs clustered above his head like a halo. You know, if I just engage this man in marriage, I'm set for life. Well, she might be dealing with the backside of that bargain right now.
Well, that's the thing. You get in, it's like marrying into the Corleones. I mean, if your analogy holds true, David, and there's no reason for me to doubt it, if it holds true, then she's Diane Keaton.
Yep. Well, probably without the respect. All Michael wants to do is All Michael wanted her to do was stay out of family business and raise the kids. All she had to do was simply drop her morals and step out of the way. Well, I'm sure in the Corleone world, I'm sure Michael treated her better than George has treated Laura.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all. And you know, the Kitty Kelly book, Babs treats her like garbage. I mean, if you were to sit down and feel sorry for somebody, Laura Bush is probably someone worth feeling sorry for. I mean, she's not nearly as hateful as Babs is. There's every reason in the world to indicate that their children were the product of artificial insemination. I'm not kidding.
Oh my God. Well, you know, so far as anybody has spoken about, rumored about, made any reference to, there was a pregnancy, which has always put the possibility of what's George really about when things get interesting.
Well, see, and it all comes back, David. It really does. To a question of personal honesty. You know, I'm not going to sit here and make fun of George Bush if it turns out that he had some sort of repressed the homoerotic three-way with a woman in Vegas and Victor Ashe. I'm not going to make fun of that. But I will damn sure point out the hypocrisy of it.
We will shine the bright light of anti-hypocrisy on an evil, hidden act while speaking about very different behavior for the purpose of furthering one's career. That's what you and I dislike intensely.
Right. Because I don't care what goes on when the light goes off. I don't. But I do care when you let something like that so torment your psyche that you start hurting other people because you yourself are hurting so badly. Oh God, I'm gonna I'm not licensed to practice psychiatry. I better quit.
Well, but when an individual creates a parallel universe and pulls the entire nation down his parallel universe lying rat hole, then somebody's got to start talking about it. And I'm going to get out of the way and let there at least be one break in this one-hour segment. according to my wonderful clock that has done really well running on AA batteries for so long, it says I should shut the heck up and let the real callers have their way. Because the other night, you know, I got on the phone and I ran a couple of callers off by talking too long. And by golly, I've almost done it again. But we're gonna wrap this up and get out of.
It's always a joy, David. Don't sweat it at all. But have yourself a great night.
Oh, I shall. It's cool. It's nice. No wind blowing. It's a gorgeous night in the middle of Tennessee. So, Bob, take care. Thanks for doing the show, and all the best to all the listeners.
All right. Thanks so much, David. Take care.
See you later.
Bye now. Our good friend David in Middle Tennessee. And you know, I'll take a break. I will do that. It's the right thing to do. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. And I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Shut up.
coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
You take your six-year-old to the playground. You watch her run from the slide to the swings. Another mother strikes up a conversation. You take your eye off your daughter for a few seconds. You look back, and she's gone.
Lily? Lily?
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if she were actually abducted. To receive free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
In society where there's diversity, we all learn from each other in the sense of understanding each other's beliefs and cultures in society, respecting that.
When you meet people who are different from you, the biggest thing you can do is learn from them.
There's a long way to go for disabled people to feel part of a larger community, and I'm starting to feel like I'm included, especially in the university setting.
I don't put the responsibility completely to other people, but I think I had a responsibility to feel included. That's what has made me a difference in my life.
A little niceness can go a long way. One life at a time, one person at a time, we will make a difference.
We were studying Martin Luther King Jr., and one of his quotes was, "We must learn to live together as brothers and sisters, or perish together as fools."
Together, I know we will make a difference.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
As a dad, you'll probably spend years teaching your son how to hit a baseball, how to throw a tight spiral and hit a receiver, how to hit the strike zone. But the question is this: how much time will you spend teaching him what not to hit? Teach your son early and often that all violence against women is wrong. For tips on what to say, visit endabuse.org. Brought to you by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention, the Ad Council, and this station.
In 12 minutes before the hour. Let's go straight back to the phones. Bill in Lexington, Kentucky has been waiting. Bill, I thank you for your patience and welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing okay. Just wanted to let you know that I did a Google search on Laura at the Mayflower Hotel, and I got some pretty good hits on there. I guess she did stay there for a while.
It originated, I guess, with the Wayne Madsen report. I'm looking at it right here.
Right.
And it says that the Mayflower will neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah. Yeah. So evidently he's in trouble. I hope she bust him in the chops for
Well, I worry about her because that family has no scruples, Bill.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, didn't she kill somebody down in Texas, run over?
Yeah, when she was a teenager, she had a car wreck and killed her then-boyfriend,
yeah.
As a matter of fact.
I heard about that. Boy, I tell you, they're a piece of work, these people.
Well, they are. They're a cross between Mayberry and they're the Mayberry Corleones.
Yeah, well, yeah. Makes the Sopranos look like never mind. Make the Sopranos look like the Simpsons.
Yeah, Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah, right. That's true. Oh, well, anyway. And then we have our Kentucky governor who's indicted.
Oh, Ernie Fletcher. Is that who it is?
Yeah, he's a piece of work, too. That guy.
Well, is he under indictment?
Oh, yes. For three at least three misdemeanors for hiring practices at the state level. And
well, you know, these people are coming unglued left and right. I've got a story here in front of me, Bill, about something going down in Ohio. You know, another bastion of Republicanism, and this guy was a senior official at the Workers' Comp Fund. He pled guilty today.
Oh my God!
For taking bribes.
Is that Tony No? No, that's no.
No, this is the guy who worked with No.
Oh, okay.
This was a guy named Terrence Gasper.
Oh yeah, okay.
And he's apparently struck a deal, and he's rolling over.
Oh, jeez. Boy, it's coming unglued in Ohio too, huh? Gee, man.
Well, they're dirty all over the place.
And
there was a story in the New York Times today about Catherine Harris coming unglued in Florida.
Oh no, you're kidding! I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah, the makeup's off of her, I guess.
Oh yeah, well, God. And then I happened to catch a glimpse. Oh God, I hate to say this. I crossed over Fox News last night, and they had the witch appropriately on 666, Ann Coulter. Oh
yes.
Oh Lord, that woman is she's ugly, and if she ain't a man, I don't know what is. I'm serious, man. Talking about gay marriages, that woman's. Then she said, "Oh, I'm a Christian." Oh, okay, fine.
Well, yeah, and what's the great quote? Matt Lauer asked her if she really thought that Jesus would approve of the way she treats other people, and she said, "Absolutely." And this is the quote: "Jesus was no panty waste."
Oh, Lord, Jesus was no panty. Oh.
You know, one of these days I'm going to get a hold of a copy of like the Right Wing Secret Bible. And you know, it can't be more than two or three pages thick.
Oh.
Well, now I take that back. All the mean stuff from the Old Testament will be there.
Oh yeah, right. That's true. Oh yeah.
But only like two or three pages of the New Testament. You know, because she said, well, you know, he got mad at the people she actually used Jesus Christ to his dealings with the money changers in the temple to justify her hate.
Really? You're kidding. Oh, geez, that's sacrilege.
Yeah, that was on the.
That's sacrilege.
That was either on the Matt Lauer interview or the interview with Alan Kick Me Combs.
Oh, yeah. Alan Combs. He's pathetic. If he loses any more weight, he's going to start looking like Ann Coulter. I don't know.
He just makes me sad. I can't imagine what a person must. Because, well, it's like what I said with Peter talking earlier. I could pretend the conservative shtick and probably get rich doing this. Alan Combs gets paid to be a doormat, I can't imagine what level of self-loathing one has to exist at in order to be Alan Combs.
And he's like the straight man to Sean Hannity or something like that. I don't know. He's like Sean Hannity's doormat or something.
Yeah, he's the whip dog for Sean Hannity, because if you actually, and see, that's the trick, if you actually put anybody with any guts or verve or smarts up against Sean Hannity would run screaming into the night with his perfect hairdo flying out behind him.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I know. If you confront him, and it's just like Bill O'Reilly, too. Bill O'Reilly will go unglued if you confront him with the truth. He'll come on.
All you have to do with O'Reilly is just say one word: falafel.
Oh, falafel? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You remember when he sicked? He tried to sick the cops on the guy who called up and said Keith Olbermann's name to him on the radio.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
And he went off on that insane diatribe about I will send Fox security to your home.
Gee, oh yeah, yeah. I heard about that one too. But man, these people are sick, and I think George Bush is on the verge too. He's on the verge of.
Well, I think David was right just a few minutes ago. I really can. You can, if you're watching carefully, you can see a little fraying around the edges.
Yeah, yeah, really. I think I can too, and it's like my wife. Several when he was first elected, she looked at him on TV. She says, "That guy's on medication. He's on antidepressants." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "Well, I take them, and I ought to know." She's been taking them for several years, and she looked at him and she says, "That guy's sick. He's in bad shape." And she ought to know.
Well, yeah, I think. There are clips out there. Trying to remember where I saw of him actively slurring.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if this was a Democratic president, there would have been a move to invoke that constitutional amendment about the disability of the president and get somebody in there who actually wasn't whacked out of their mind.
Well,
but But the thing is, his followers are as crazy as he is, Bill.
Oh, I know. And plus, if they get rid of him, who are we going to have to replace him? Dick Cheney? And he's one step, I don't know, he's one step away from the grave, or is he already in there? We don't know anything about it.
Well, I personally think he's undead, but, you know.
Yeah, well, now, Donald Rumsfeld is like Vlad the Impaler.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sicko. I mean, anybody that leaves out the Geneva Convention rules about feeding prisoners out of the Army manual, that's a sick man.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know you're up against the top of the hour news, and I will. I just wanted to touch base with you again. It's my second.
Well, Bill, it's always good to hear from you.
Okay, and I'll keep you. I'll keep listening, and I'll call you. I'll call you when I have something to say.
All right, whenever the spirit moves you. Thanks, Bill.
All right.
Take care.
Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Bill in Lexington, Kentucky. We are kind of up against the break, but Bill mentioned the Geneva Conventions on Torture. There was a conference call today. A number of clergy came together to denounce American torture at the same time that European nations were confirming that their airspace and their facilities have been used for stops for CIA flights that wound up in Poland and Romania, our secret torture camps. And one of the clergymen in this conference noted that the title of the Geneva Convention is the Geneva Convention Against Torture and Other Inhumane and Degrading Practices, something like that. And he said, he pointed out what a hypocritical dichotomy it is that the administration argues that degrading practices are not included in the Geneva Convention when it's part of the very title. I was surprised by that. But if you go and you look at the official title of the Geneva Convention, you'll find that it includes the very things that the White House says it doesn't include. And they're counting on the fact that people don't read these things. Quite amazing, isn't it? What a fun little... So the phone number, of course, you know that. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is, in fact, the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. A roll call vote on the gay marriage amendment occurred this afternoon, failing to gain the three-fifths majority it would have needed to pass the chamber. The vote fell largely on party lines, with Republicans Lincoln Chafee, Susan Collins, Judd Gregg, John McCain, Olympia Snow, Arlen Specter, and John Sununu voting against the motion to close debate on the proposed amendment. In a related story, James Dobson and Tony Snow had a conversation on the topic in Snow's West Wing office that was broadcast to 3,000 radio stations worldwide. In the conversation, they both likened limiting marriage to heterosexual couples to the 1960s civil rights struggles in the United States. Phone company executives won't be grilled by a Senate panel anytime soon about their roles in the Bush administration's eavesdropping program. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, said Tuesday he will hold off subpoenaing the telecommunications chiefs while he works with the White House on his legislation that would ask a secretive federal court to review the constitutionality of Bush's surveillance operations. Democrats accused Specter of abdicating Congress's oversight responsibilities. The committee's top Democrat, Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont, asked sarcastically, quote, "Why don't we just recess for the rest of the year? Vice President Cheney will just tell the nation what laws we'll have," end quote. Bush has acknowledged that the National Security Agency monitored, without court approval and thus illegally, the communications of terror suspects when one person was in the United States and another was overseas. Until Bush ordered the operations shortly after 9/11, a judge had to sign off on such monitoring. Following a report last month in USA Today, lawmakers have said the government is also using general information on Americans' telephone calls, such as the number called and the number dialed from, to analyze calling patterns to detect and track suspected terrorist activity. Unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drone aircraft, are about to be launched for the first time by the police in Los Angeles. UAVs have long been used by the military in war zones such as Iraq or Afghanistan, but the technology has been adapted for domestic use and could revolutionize the way law enforcement agencies carry out surveillance and rescue operations. The Los Angeles Sheriff's Department has been experimenting with a drone called Sky Seer, which it intends to put into service later this month. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
In a rare case of officer dissent, a Fort Lewis Army lieutenant has refused orders to head out to Iraq this month to lead troops in what he believes is an illegal war of occupation. First Lieutenant Aaron Watada was scheduled to make his first deployment to Iraq this month. His refusal to accompany the Stryker Brigade troops puts him at risk of court-martial and years of prison time. Watada said Tuesday in a telephone interview from Fort Lewis, quote, "I feel that we have been lied to and betrayed by this administration. It is the duty, the obligation of every soldier, and specifically the officers, to evaluate the legality, the truth behind every order, including the order to go to war," end quote. In a statement released today, Watada said, quote, "The war in Iraq violates our democratic system of checks and balances," end quote. The full extent of European collusion with the CIA during operations to abduct terrorism suspects and fly them to countries where they may be tortured is laid bare today by the continent's most authoritative human rights body. Several states have allowed the agency to snatch their own residents. Others have offered extensive logistical support, while many have turned a blind eye, according to the Council of Europe. The UK stands accused of not only allowing the use of British airspace and airports, but of providing information that was used during the torture of one suspect. The report adds that there is strong evidence to suspect two European states, Poland and Romania, of permitting the CIA to operate secret prisons on their soil, despite official denials. The road to hell was crowded with the curious on Tuesday, as well as devils in disguise, hearse enthusiasts, Christian protesters, and merchants trying to cash in on the apocalypse. Hell, Michigan, a tiny town about 60 miles west of Detroit, threw itself open for a once-in-a-millennium party to mark the passage of June 6, 2006, or 666, a number long associated with the Antichrist. Home to only about 70 souls on an average day, Hell's population swelled to the hundreds by Tuesday afternoon, with dozens waiting in line to buy T-shirts emblazoned with 666. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All righty then. You know the phone number. Get busy if you want to get involved. While the Senate was busy, this is Wednesday. They wasted 3 days on the stupid, ignorant, bigoted, small-minded, mouth-breathing defense of marriage amendment. And, I've said it a couple of times. Don't let them the first inclination was, we need to protect marriage. You just look at them and go, you're a fool. You're just damn fool. And we are inclined to ignore them and walk away from them. And get as far away from these freaks as we possibly can. But more and more, I come to the conclusion that is no longer acceptable. And I know that the people who call themselves, I'm a Democrat, but I'm a moderate Democrat. They want to find common ground with these people. They want to find some way to dialogue with them. You cannot dialogue with these people. We've talked a lot about the things that we tend to forget in the last couple of hours. All the hateful things about George Bush's life and about, you've been listening, And we tend to forget because so much of it piles up, the natures of these people pushing these things. Yeah, Tony Snow and James Dobson sat down and had a group broadcast to 3,000 radio stations that are controlled by Dobson. And we forget that Dobson has actually, this monster has actually written a book, okay? I don't want to put anybody off here. A book in which he encourages so-called parenting skills. And among these parenting skills, look, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive, I'm not ashamed of the human body. And I believe in especially in this era, we speak frankly about our children, about sex and sexuality, or we run the risk of killing them by our own ignorance. And our own squeamishness. But James Dobson advises fathers to get in the shower with their young sons and, shall we say, get graphic with the genitalia. If anybody else in America advocated something like this, do you remember the right-wing hissy that was had over NAMBLA? NAMBLA that was largely a construct of their own sick and twisted imaginations? Oh, the ACLU defends the North American Man-Boy Love Association. Oh, that's sick. See where the liberals want to take us? And yet here's James Dobson, who actually got an invite to the White House and a special audience with Tony Snowjob, or Snow, and did a live broadcast to right-wing America today. And this guy advises fathers to get in the shower and yuck with their... And James Dobson advises parents, male and female alike, that in order to teach their children well and raise them up in the way of blah, yada, yada. This is a quote. He advises parents to beat their children, and I quote, until they cry real tears. Unquote. Ever read up on any sort of nonviolent principles, understands that violence begets violence. But again, if anybody except a religious fundamentalist in this country were to suggest that you beat children until they cry real tears, they wouldn't be welcome in polite society. They would be openly shunned on the streets. Mothers and fathers would shield their little children's eyes from seeing a monster like that. But this, you know, these creeps can say, "Ah, Jesus told me to." There are websites out there from so-called fundamentalist ministries that arrange marriages. Yeah, I mean that. Yeah, like you think of a ring. Yeah, you know, you're three, he's five, okay, they'll get married when she's 11. And it still happens in America. And this is the traditional marriage that these monsters, these freaks, these want to protect, want to defend. In my beautiful home state of West Virginia, you don't have to go very far to see poverty. Nor do you have to go very far here in Alabama or Mississippi. The fact of the matter is, there are a few places in the United States where you have to drive very far to see poverty. And there you can see the war on marriage. You can see the war on marriage that is brought about by disease, by ignorance. You want to protect marriage? What do you say? What do you say we fully fund our public education system instead of setting them up to fail with something like No Child Behind Left? You want to defend marriage? How about setting it up so that the marriages that are entered into aren't entered into out of desperation because, well, you know, she missed her period and we got to get married. Well, birth control. Oh, no, can't have any pills because the pharmacist might object because it might cause a spontaneous abortion because he's a fundy. We'll be right back.
ask kids to talk to their parents about,
you know,
no way,
boy and girl stuff.
A girl in my school, in elementary school, had told me about it, but she told me the wrong thing. She told me something totally wrong. And when I asked my mom, I didn't know how she was going to react to the question. But then I figured it'd be better to ask her and get the right information. So I went out and I got my books and I brought pictures and I explained, this is what really happened. I was shocked when my mom told me the truth, which was totally different from what she said. So that's how I kind of handled it. I realized that she was a little bit uncomfortable. Her top lip gets really skinny. It's like this. Sometimes I can feel my lip getting skinny because she's brought it to my attention before I didn't realize, and now I can feel it happening, and I'm kind of afraid.
But it doesn't work.
Talk together.
A part of the big help.
For more information, go to nick.com.
Help me a lot.
Think you have driving skills? Take the challenge at drivingskillsforlife.com. Earn rewards like free music downloads. Driving Skills for Life.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
The United Steelworkers and the Sierra Club are announcing an historic strategic alliance today in Washington, D.C. The steelworkers say the new alliance will promote a new vision of public policy on environmental and labor issues, bringing together one of the largest labor unions and the biggest environmental organization in the nation. The USW says the alliance will promote smart energy solutions to global warming, will fight together for responsible trade policies, and work to reduce the risks of toxic chemicals in the workplace as it brings together the labor and environmental movements.
A new film making the festival circuit is a wake-up call for coffee drinkers. Titled Black Gold, the film focuses on the exploitation surrounding the world's second most valuable trading commodity after oil. It tracks the journey of Tedese Mescala as he seeks to save more than 75,000 struggling coffee farmers from bankruptcy in his home country of Ethiopia. Mescala is the founder of the Oromia Cooperative Union, which seeks to bypass the international trading system and find buyers willing to pay a higher price for quality coffee. Mescala explains.
The main reason is to bypass the people who are benefiting from sales of coffee and sell the coffee from the producers directly to buyers and to bring back the profits back to the grower, just to improve their earning or the money they get from sales of coffee.
The film was made by Mark and Nick Francis and is set for a limited release later this fall. More information is available on the film's website, www.blackgoldmovie.com.
Today and tomorrow, the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, will be holding a sleep-in at the FAA to call attention to the problem of flight attendant fatigue. Flight attendants want the FAA to release a fatigue study that was supposed to be sent to Congress on June 1st. The union says flight attendants are expected to maintain alertness and vigilance as never before, while working longer hours with fewer rest breaks and demanding schedules that take them through several time zones. The fatigue study is expected to show the detrimental impact of fatigue and the need for longer rest breaks for flight attendants. Here's today's economic report. As Republicans in the Senate push repeal of the estate tax, a poll shows 57% of Americans want to keep it. United for a Fair Economy says the tax is only on the rich, coupled with assets of $4 million or more. 99.7% of us will pay no estate tax. United for a Fair Economy says 18 ultra-rich families are behind the multi-million-dollar decade-old effort to repeal the estate tax because it'll net them an estimated $71.6 billion. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Coming up on 23 minutes after the hour. If you want to get involved in the program, you know how to do it. 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. I don't fully know how to put these sorts of things. But I'm sick to death. I'm sick to death of the kind of politics that says that we think the has anybody. I mean, we heard what was that guy's name? Worked for Ralph Reed, who testified in, to Congress and openly referred his email. Michael Scanlon, his emails were read in which he referred to religious fundamentalists as whack jobs. Has anybody ever gone to these fundy churches, to these fundy church members, and explained to them how exactly the party that they think is their political party thinks about them? Has that ever been done? Has it ever been tried? A political party that thinks that a certain segment of the population, roughly 20% of the electorate, are so abjectly brain dead that all they've got to do is dangle a gay person in front of them and they'll run and vote Republican? Now, you know what's sad? It works. I forget what the exact numbers were today, or from yesterday, from the primary election here in the state of Alabama. But it was the margin between yes and no on the protection of marriage constitutional amendment wasn't even close. The Klan and the religion industry won. And it's heartrending because it tells me that not only the Republicans are right. They think they can just dangle a gay person in front of a bunch of bigots and that it will drive them to the Republican Party. Just as 50 years ago they dangled African Americans in front of Southern whites and they ran to conservative causes and they formed conservative citizens committees, which was basically the Klan with a bow tie. It is enough that if you dwell on it long enough, it will become defeating. It will defeat us. And that's what they want. But as I was saying a little bit ago, if anyone but James Dobson advocated beating your children until they cried real tears, that person would be shunned by decent society. But he says, wow, you know, Jesus told me to, and he gets away with it. Is there anyone within the sound of my voice that would beat a child? Yeah, and for what? For what? Son, did you take cookies when mommy told you not to? Whack! I've told you, son, not to take the cookies when mommy tells you not to. Whack! Whack! Son, are you sorry you took the cookies? Whack! Oh, son, I don't think you're sorry yet because you're not crying real tears yet. Is that a protected marriage? Is that a defended family? A family that is beaten into tears? Is that the America that you and I want? If it is not the America that you want, if you want an America where children are safe, if you want an America where children are not beaten until they cry real tears, then the Dobsons in this nation must be actively opposed. They must be stopped. I'm not talking about anybody doing anything violent, but we cannot just turn our backs and say, oh, it's those crazy people again. That has been done. It's been done to our detriment. Nobody, you know, time and time again it's been done. We quietly, liberals, progressives, Democrats, quietly ignored the religious right while the religious right was plotting our demise. My God, the religious right beat George Wallace Jr. in a race for lieutenant governor here yesterday by calling him a liberal. The same bigots that 50 years ago beat his daddy in a gubernatorial race by calling him a lover beat his son yesterday by calling him a liberal. Nothing changes. And our ignoring them didn't work then, and it is not going to work now, and it will lead to the demise of this nation if we let them get away with it. It is time to begin openly challenging them. And I don't mean just by sitting around in a chat room like ours. It's a lot of fun, or by listening to programs like this, and I'm glad you do, and it energizes me for the day in and day out struggles. But when you see that bumper sticker, it's time to start looking at people and saying, do you really believe that? Or we can ignore them some more and ignore our Constitution. It's that easy, isn't it? Let's take a break. As ever, your phone calls are more than welcome. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. I'm tired of a bunch of freaks trying to run over my rights. How about you? This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Labor Report from the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch. A campus protest Tuesday at University of California, Santa Cruz, advocating higher wages for custodians, culminated with a standoff in the parking lot outside Chancellor Denise Denton's office, where students blocked Denton in her car for about 5 minutes while performing a skit about racism, according to student witnesses. Julian Posadas, who represents campus employees with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Local 3288, said, quote, "The chancellor said she was going to resolve this problem for quite some time," end quote. In a final push before the close of the school year, about 60 UC Santa Cruz students and employees marched to again press Denton to boost pay for low-wage workers, many of whom are Latinos, they pointed out. The White House threatened on Tuesday to veto legislation that would reverse the Bush administration's decision to impose contract terms on the nation's 14,500 unionized air traffic controllers. The move put pressure on congressional Republicans not to follow one of their own, Ohio Representative Stephen LaTourette, who has proposed a measure that would send disputed aspects of the contract to binding arbitration. LaTourette's bill would change the law that permitted FAA Administrator Marion Blakey to impose contract terms after Congress opted not to intervene in the dispute following a 60-day review that ended on Monday. The unusual FAA action formally ended 10 months of contentious bargaining, including mediation. It also pushed relations between the agency and its biggest union to their most contentious point since 1981, when thousands of controllers were fired for ignoring a White House back-to-work order by President Ronald Reagan. By law, American workers have the right to form unions and bargain over wages and working conditions. Trying to exercise those rights is another matter entirely. Workers are routinely fired or discriminated against for supporting unions. Most employers hire anti-union consultants to block organizing drives, and some go as so far as to close down work sites when employees vote for a union. That's why the story of Singular Wireless and its union, the CWA, the Communication Workers of America, is so unusual and worth a closer look. Back in 2000, Singular worked out what's called a neutrality agreement with the CWA. Each side agreed not to disparage the other, and workers were permitted to form unions at their job sites if a majority signed cards indicating that they wanted to do so. No name-calling, no bitter battles, no distractions for the job at hand, which is, after all, providing wireless phone service to customers. Today, about 39,000 technicians, customer support workers, and retail salespeople at Singular belong to the Communication Workers of America. The Atlanta-based company has about 70,000 workers in all and annual revenues of about $32 billion. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch. Coming Monday and Tuesday, the Head On Radio Network will be broadcasting live from the Taking Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. Join Bruce Birch and Guy James from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. on location in the nation's capital. That's right, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
You're on per someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares.
All right, welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's about, coming up on 23 minutes before the hour, 23 minutes left in the program. Realistically, if you want to get your licks in, call it 18 minutes or so. You've got 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366, if the spirit moves you on this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And just sort of cruising away from the defense of marriage debate that's eaten up three precious days of the Senate's time, let's look at some of the other stuff that we could have been hearing about on the so-called mainstream network news. Had anybody been paying attention to something besides whether or not a couple of guys could pick out a China pattern. And I know that sounds flippant, but I mean, remember Dubai? Yeah, that Dubai, you know, the dictatorship over there in the Persian Gulf, run by like two or three incredibly rich people. Emaar Properties. They're a developer. They operate out of Dubai. And guess what they just did? They just bought a humongous California home builder, an operation called John Lang Homes. No jokes about John Holmes, okay? John Lang Homes for $1 billion in cash. That's the second largest privately held home builder in the United States. Muhammad Ali Alabar, Emaar's chairman, said this agreement will provide Emaar with an important gateway into the U.S. real estate market. Oh, my God. But, nope, we didn't get that story because we were too busy talking about the defense of marriage. So, to that story. Let's see. Another story. I mentioned this in our conversation with Bill down in Lexington, Kentucky. Former senior official at Ohio's $15 billion insurance fund for injured workers, the Workers' Comp Fund in Ohio. He pleaded guilty to federal and state charges today. He admitted that he took bribes in exchange for government investment opportunity. And he's rolled over and he's got himself a deal with prosecutors. This is all tied in, and I'm sure you followed it, with the Ohio CoinGate scandal. In exchange for the $25,000 payoff from a dealer who handled the agency's troubled investment in rare coins, Gasper recommended a second investment of $25 million with coin dealer Tom Noe. Noe pleaded guilty last week to illegally funneling money to George Bush's reelection campaign so that votes could be stolen or hidden or otherwise done away with in the state of Ohio. But, you know, we can't have any detailed analysis of that case because that's just too complicated for Wolf Blitzer to explain in 15 seconds. After the federal hearing, Gasper let out a deep sigh, according to the Associated Press, and shook the hands of federal prosecutors. You know, the easy out on analyzing this story is to say that it's just more evidence of Republican corruption. That's the easy out. But you have to take a little bit of a deeper look, and you have to realize that we're talking about the workers' compensation system, which is still largely controlled by the state of Ohio. workers' compensation system. A gang of Republican, and these are, I mean, they're petty criminals on a grand larceny scale. They're little sneak thieves. They're shoplifters. They raided the workers' compensation system, the system that is designed to be there and make payouts for income replacement for people who carry the economy of the state of Ohio on their damn backs. They raided it and invested millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars in so-called rare coins? Rare coins? I mean, we're not talking about Krugerrands. We're talking about a 1942 Buffalo Indian head nickel. Oh, but you could see the hair on the buffalo, so it's really, it's in really fine numismatic condition. Boy, that's worth two nickels. This is a fund that pays out money literally, to widows and orphans. People whose spouses sacrificed their very existence so some guy could get a little bit richer, or a stock dividend could be declared with an extra penny in it. And a bunch of godless, soulless, motherless, heartless Republicans raided that fund. Does this make you as sick as it does me? I mean, I expect Republicans to raid the Treasury. It's what Republicans do. Sure. I don't like it. I think it should be prosecuted. I expect them to raid the Treasury. I expect them to give tax breaks to their buddies. But to raid the workers' compensation fund? What level of sleaze does that, what level of graft, what level of just unmentionable corruption does that tell you is operating in the heart and soul of the Republican Party in the state of Ohio? So that's too complicated for Wolf Blitzer. But we can get a good 5 minutes on Brad and Angelina's new baby. Look, they're defending marriage. Wait, they're not married. Who cares? We'll take a break. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. When former Vice President Al Gore was asked what it would take to convince him to run for office in 2008, he explained quite correctly that given the current nature of American politics, he'd be at a distinct disadvantage in a presidential campaign. When you take into account the ruthlessness of the Republican Party, the self-important nature of the so-called professional media, and most importantly, the indifference and ignorance of far too many Americans, his observation is dead on. In a society that looks upon everything in terms of entertainers and audiences, Gore's serious intellectualism is a nearly fatal handicap. I see where he's coming from, but I wish he would run anyway. We don't always get to choose the venues for our battles, but the issues are far too important to be choosy. And I can't think of anyone else with the knowledge and the experience to understand the problem of global warming, what to do about it, and more importantly, how to get it done. If Mr. Gore truly believes in his cause, he has to go out and get the power to do what needs to be done. It's his moral duty to do so. And it's our moral duty to stand by him. Mr. Gore alone isn't going to accomplish anything. It's going to take all of us together. It may take nothing less than rebuilding our entire society, but if that's what needs to be done, we have to do it. And we have to see it through. Saving the country is only the first and easiest task. The real fight is to save the human race and to show that it deserves to be saved. Because if we're not capable of taking care of the planet we live on, we deserve what we get. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us tonight for this Wednesday night prayer meet edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and straight to the phones, Wayne is joining us. Hey, Wayne, welcome aboard.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. You?
Oh, you're doing real good. Great show.
Thank you.
Great show. Some of the callers. Peter, how can anyone not love Peter? That guy, he's just great. And Jim, and, on and on and on and on. So this is really exciting, man. Humpty Dumpty's falling down, London Bridge is falling, these people are falling apart faster than, you can't even watch it all.
You can't keep up with it.
Huh?
You can't keep up with it.
No, you can't keep up with it. And, I'm not a very religious man. But
in your way.
In my way. Well, I pray that, the pickle story is true.
I once said I'll never get on my knees, but I'd get on my knees if that prayer would come true.
Oh, yeah, I would too, man. I would too. I mean, my God, how are they going to defend that? Pickles leaves the Oval Office.
The next trick, though, we've joked about this, Wayne, from time to time, If someone would do for George what Monica did for Bill, we could impeach his ass and finally get rid of him?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, maybe it's happened. Somebody needs to ask George publicly whether he's getting it on with Condi.
Are you involved in an adulterous affair?
So he can say...
That's a simple question, right?
Yeah, so he could say, I'd not have sex with that woman, the Secretary of State.
Right.
And then we can impeach him. And Henry Hyde can holler about how the flag's falling.
Yeah, there you go.
And, people can, little right-wing Republicans can run around shooting watermelons.
Exactly.
We spend $70 million, bring Ken Starr out of retirement.
Oh, yeah, Ken would really get into this one.
Oh, yeah, this one has everything.
I mean, not only would it be an adulterous affair, it would be between the races.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, what a scandal that is.
Oh, he
just
probably wouldn't be able to use
the big words
in the
he could use to describe all the sexual exploits. Oh, my God. What a disgusting human being he is.
Yeah, but it's absolutely exciting to think about, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. It truly is. It truly is.
Oh, we're so sick.
Oh, God. So the defense of marriage, huh? Okay. And what did it go down, 48-49?
Yeah, it was a cloture vote.
Okay. To stop debate.
Yeah. And this time, the people defending marriage wanted to stop debate so they could, say that, there's a godless liberal. He voted against the defense of marriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. And that's,
But among those 49 that voted in favor of cloture?
Was Robert Byrd.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
And the thing that blew me away is Jay, his wife's sick. Maybe that's why he wasn't there.
Well, and isn't he having his back operated on?
Yeah, maybe that was it.
Right.
Or, no, I thought he already did.
I don't know. There was some article in the paper the other day, he can't handle it anymore, he's going to get an operation. That, you know, his back is so messed up. So I don't know what's going on, you know, with that. But, you know, I mean, you know, a lot of that is political moves, too. You know, I mean, you know how many defenders of marriage we have in West Virginia.
Oh, boy.
You know, so, you know. Bird and Rockefeller go, look, the thing's going down anyway. Let's do this, and, you know, maybe that'll make some of these idiots happy, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not, I mean, you know, Robert Byrd has, you know, been an icon for so many years and in many ways a hero, you know. And, but in the same sense, you know, I'm thoroughly disgusted with a bunch of his votes. I mean, from Supreme Court to bankruptcy bills, and well, the list goes on and on. And I will more than likely end up voting for the senator for the reason that I want to keep that seat in the Democratic side.
Yeah,
you know,
so that whoever when he goes on to his reward, will appoint a Democrat.
Exactly. And, you know.
And also because John Racey is an evil freak.
Yes, he is. He's, you know, well, I guess evil freak kind of describes it pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, you know, it. Well, you know, an awful lot of times, man, you know, the vote comes down between the lesser of two evils. And, you know, we got to keep that seat and on the Democratic side. It's just that simple. You know, now, whether the Democrat that gets appointed will be a real Democrat is, well, that'll be up for debate. We'll have to see. But
that will be Senator Manchin.
That's the way I see it.
Oh, I'm batting a million.
That's the way I see it. You know, old Golden Joe. And I don't know. You know, well, you know, we could do worse. I guess we could do worse, but
yeah, and a whole lot better too.
And a whole lot better. But you know, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But these are very, very exciting times. I think it's, I mean, because more and more of these guys go down and start plea bargaining, they have absolutely no honor whatsoever, and I mean, they will rat out everybody, their own mothers, if they think it'll save their butt.
Well, you know, I wish I knew for a fact that the prosecutor in charge of this you know, the CoinGate thing in Ohio, I wish I knew for a fact that he was ethical and above board and a man of honor, because the one thing I would like to see come out of this whole thing is a final statement under oath before a judge, Your Honor, we fixed the Ohio election for Bush.
That would be very good. That would be very good. What's this thing you hear about Catherine Harris?
The New York Times had an article. I mean, you know, her staff has quit, her consultants quit, and she's out there guaranteeing victory in November.
You know, she spent a lot of money on them new boobs, man. I mean, she wants her money back. You know.
And that Mary Kay don't come cheap.
That's exactly right. But. And then Ann Coulter is, you know, what's the skinny
insane
on her?
She, yeah, no. Oh, no, she just said, you know, that the 9/11 widows are enjoying their celebrity status and that they were glad their husbands died.
The 9/11 widows are glad their husbands died?
Yeah.
She said that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Is there any truth to the claim that she's the only woman that could write her name in the snow? Do you have any information on that?
No, and I don't even like thinking about it, man.
I mean, without Adam's apple, pal.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it, you know. I don't doubt it, but it's exciting to watch, and, well, I have great hopes for this upcoming election. And, you know, I think it was Murtha. Murtha said something like, you know, I don't know, to the fact that we're going to take 40 or 50 seats. And, you know, I don't think that's really all that unrealistic.
No, it isn't.
I mean, people are really, truly disgusted. You know, they might have to vote, you know. I mean, you know, some of these Republicans or conservatives or religious right people or whatever the hell they want to call themselves, you know, might have to hold their nose to vote for a Democrat. But I think they're going, God, we got to try something.
Well, that 20% solution, they're never going to vote for anybody but a so-called conservative.
Well, but yeah, exactly. But I would say 10% of them will stay home. 10%
right.
of that, well, you know. 50%
well, I mean, there is
of hope.
Even you know, even down here in Alabama, Wayne, that crazy ass Judge Roy Moore,
he went down. Right?
He got his gut stomped out.
All right.
You know, more than 2-1 on the Republican side. You know, where that 20% lives.
Well, now that's saying something. I mean, that's the big rock with the writing on it, guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a very good sign, I think.
Yeah.
A very good sign.
All we can do is wait and watch and enjoy the ride. But honest to God, Wayne, I really do believe we've got to fight back a little bit harder against these bigoted bastards.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do, Bob. It's time to stand up and be counted. You know, don't be shy anymore. You know, tell these son of a bitches.